Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
November is Lung Cancer Awareness Month. What should we do to maintain our lung health? Let's go in depth with Dr. Gerard Matisik, pulmonologist at the Pella Regional Health Center. Dr. Matisik, what's your specialty?
I'm a pulmonologist, a lung specialist.
And what made you want to do that?
I think I kind of gravitated that during the course of my internship. Actually, I remember taking care of a gentleman that was suffering with lung cancer. And for whatever reason, seemed to be attracted towards trying to help patients with lung disease and obviously lung cancer.
Well, there's just something so primal about breath, about breathing. And if you can't breathe well, I mean, just everything else is out the window. I mean, you can have a injured knee or even a bad back or something, but lungs or bad digestive system, but there's something just, I don't know, so significant and meaningful and foundational to our health as lungs.
Yeah, correct. And a lot of that was also tied to your heart function in the sense that, you know, the heart and lungs work hand in hand. Both dysfunction in the lungs as well as the heart can cause shortness of breath. And sometimes it's important to try to differentiate really the source of a patient's shortness of breath so that you can really better treat the patient. The caveat there is although a lot of times shortness of breath is a reflection of some type of lung disease, it can sometimes be a reflection of cardiac dysfunction, and it would be important to see someone in order to be evaluated appropriately to ensure what the problem is so that you can be treated appropriately.
Which is back to your point about the integration of the heart and lungs.
Correct, correct.
All right, so what do people need to do to maintain lung health? Is it pretty simple? Or what?
Well, probably the most important thing that anyone can do, I would say from my perspective, is avoid smoking. And if you are a smoker, work towards becoming a non-smoker as quickly as possible. We certainly know that smoking adversely affects patients' lungs. Certainly not everyone who smokes necessarily will develop COPD or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Some of that's probably genetically mediated, but by far, you know, the average person that I see here in my practice that suffers with lung disease, their lung disease is primarily induced by smoking. We also know that in addition to lung disease, smoking is associated with cancer of the mouth, cancer of the upper airway. It's the leading cause of heart disease in this country. And we certainly see people with cancer of the esophagus and stomach. So there's multiple reasons why someone should not smoke or work towards becoming a non-smoker in short order. That's probably the major thing that I would recommend for patients to consider in terms of maintaining good lung health. Another issue would be, you know, on a day-to-day basis, making sure that we protect our lungs from noxious chemicals or agents that may be harmful to the lung. You know, we certainly have a lot of farmers that I see in the practice that, you know, through the course of their day will work with pesticides or fertilizers, whatever, and I think the natural tendency is, you know, they're mixing these things or loading these things into equipment and there's dust associated with the product they're using. Many times they don't take the time to put on any type of protective respiratory equipment. You know, so after serial exposures over the course of a lifetime of farming, a lot of these individuals unfortunately do have lung disease from their inhalational exposures. You know, we see painters undergo the same process where, you know, their premise is, well, you know, I smoke and I can't smoke while I'm wearing protective respiratory equipment, so I'm not going to wear the protective respiratory equipment. And as a consequence of that, they inhale paint fumes or lacquer fumes in conjunction with the adverse effects of the cigarette smoke that they're using. Certain household cleaners can also be a potential source of irritation to the lung or lung injury, so that's another area to consider. Probably the worst things you can do is the mixed bleach and vinegar that can create a toxic environment.
People do that.
Yeah.
You don't think about it. They both seem like...
Right. And you know, and I've actually seen patients, you know, that were in an enclosed bathroom and exposed to those types of fume and really developed severe shortness of breath acutely with a form of acute lung injury as a consequence of that exposure. So there's you know, many instances through the course of our day that perhaps we're somewhat lax or cavalier about what we're doing to ourselves. And I think it's important from a lung health issue to consider some of those issues and take some time that if you're going to be dealing with anything that may be harmful to you from a lung standpoint, that you use appropriate respiratory equipment and think about it before you use it in particular.
More in depth after this.
I continued my conversation about lung health with Dr. Gerard Matisik, pulmonologist at the Pella Regional Health Center. What about, this is going to sound crazy, but some of those air fresheners that people have that sort of spurt out scent and they're tied to electricity, and that sort of bothers me. I get a headache and I feel my lungs feel funny. Am I being crazy or is the...
No, that's probably real. Actually, the biggest concern with those devices is there's been several house fires as a result of those.
Really?
So I think there was a warning about 2 years ago about the potential for fire. I don't know that there's any specific studies that have looked at, you know, the ingredients of those devices. You know, I certainly agree with you that some of the odors can be more irritating than soothing or, you know, cleansing of the air. I guess my philosophy that I share with patients is the only thing we should put in our lungs is clean air. And on a day-to-day basis, inhaling clean air in and of itself may be a challenge, particularly if you live in an urban environment. But that's a common question that I'm asked, particularly as it relates to some of these other smoking cessation aids, like e-cigarettes and vapor smoking.
Well, tell us about those. Are they a hazard?
Well, the concern is they haven't been studied long-term at this point in time for us to know definitively whether or not they are potentially harmful. The premise is, again, you know, anything foreign that you put in your lung could potentially be a problem. You know, so I think that I would be very cautious with patients and tell them that they should probably avoid exposing themselves to those agents until we have more definitive evidence in terms of the safety of those devices and types of agents.
I guess that makes sense, and I hadn't thought about it, but yeah, you don't want anything else in your lungs but clean air, and the cleaner the better.
Correct.
Now, you know, as you were talking, I kept thinking back to a couple of examples of my uncles. I had two uncles. One was a house painter, and the other was a smoker, and they both died fairly young of emphysema.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, probably, because
yeah.
And so one died, I think, at 48, the other in their 50s. But those weren't good decisions that they made. And I don't think that we knew as much back then.
Correct. Yeah. I think that what we're seeing now is kind of the after effects of tobacco consumption over the course of the past 30 to 40 years, and there was a lot of debate about, well, were cigarettes harmful? The cigarette or tobacco industry, you know, certainly propagated a lot of false information in order to maintain sales of tobacco, et cetera. So I don't think the public was as well informed. You know, at the time, I don't think there was as much conscious attention to the workplace as a potential source of lung disease. I mean, statistically in this country, if you have COPD, 90% of the individuals will have COPD as a consequence of smoking. 10% of the individuals will have COPD as a consequence of workplace environment. Interestingly enough, if you go to England, the numbers are really skewed more towards the workplace environment. And part of that is because they didn't have as strict regulations as we do here in this country with OSHA oversight. So, you know, we've done a good job in that regard in terms of time and in terms of trying to protect the worker. But I think in some respects, we dropped the ball earlier with respect to the impact that tobacco is going to have on people's health. Suffice it to say, in this day and age, I think there's ample evidence that there's no rationale for anyone to smoke in this day and age.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation about lung health with Dr. Gerard Matisik, pulmonologist at the Pella Regional Health Center.
Tell me about radon. I keep hearing about radon.
Yeah, radon's a big concern. It's probably one of the leading causes of lung carcinoma in this country in non-smokers. Unfortunately, Iowa and the upper Midwest, extending back into Pennsylvania, is part of, quote, the radon belt. Radon's an odorless, colorless gas that has been directly linked to lung cancer. Really raised the concern and the need for mitigation of radon, particularly in the home environment. As a consequence of that, there's been a proliferation of businesses dealing with that, to the point where I can speak from personal experience, having just purchased and sold a home here in Pella, one of the first things we did was have the basement tested for radon because of the radon concern. So I think that that's an appropriate area of concern, and the caveat there would be that if you have any concern about what your home environment potential risk is for radon exposure, to have it tested. The testing is relatively inexpensive, and I think for whatever amount of money that you would invest in that testing would be well worth it from a health standpoint.
Well, that's like it's not even fair. I mean, smoking, we understand. You know, paint, lacquer, whatever, we understand. But radon's just there.
Right. I mean, it's almost frightening in the sense that, you know, particularly in the past, I want to say 20 years, you know, the average home, the basement has become part of the home. Whereas in previous years, you know, the basement was a kind of a dark, dingy, you know, wet environment where you just kind of stored stuff that you rarely used. But when you think about it, you know, most basements now are finished in the average home here in America. And people are physically living there or using that space on a day-to-day basis, which increases your potential risk for radon exposure, unfortunately, if indeed the radon levels are unacceptable. I have a personal friend that was diagnosed with lung cancer as a consequence of radon exposure in Des Moines, and had never touched a cigarette, unfortunately.
Now, there's sort of this critical old gap of about age range of about 10 years or so, from about maybe 15 or 16 through the early 20s, where people make that decision about smoking. That's sort of interesting to me, that window. And so how do we, I'm not sure why that's the time. I guess that's when you're experimenting, when you're a kid, when you're young. But what can be done to sort of lead people away from that track? Do you have any advice for parents or, say, young people thinking, oh, it's cool, maybe it's cool to smoke, my friends do it, they enjoy it, it's social?
Yeah, I think the best thing we do is, you know, advise parents to really sit down, you know, with their, you know, 10 or 12 year old and really kind of have a heart to heart talk about some of these issues, you know, in the sense that, you know, I think kids grow up much quicker now than they did when I was younger. And I think kids are exposed to more peer pressure than I was exposed to. So I think there's several topics that a lot of the primary care physicians will often discuss with patients, you know, in the sense that with their patients from a parental standpoint, you know, in the sense that, you know, we need to talk about smoking and the adverse effects of smoking it can have on your health. You know, we sometimes and often recommend that, you know, parents sit down and talk to their kids about sexual activity, and if they're going to be involved in sexual activity, you know, using appropriate protective mechanisms to prevent developing things like AIDS and other communicable diseases. Certainly, drug abuse is a major problem and continues to be a problem in this country, particularly with the use of medications that have been prescribed, where kids are raiding their, you know, parents' bathroom and cabinets for, you know, prescription drugs and abusing those serendipitously. So I think those three topics are certainly important topics for any parent to address with a teenager or a pre-teenager, in an effort to hopefully give the children the right information and direction so that they can make better decisions for themselves in terms of their habits and perhaps lifestyle.
Anything else we should know about lung health today?
Well, something we're doing here at the hospital, I think, is a worthwhile endeavor, is we develop a lung cancer screening program. And the program basically is directed towards patients who are deemed to be at an increased risk for lung cancer as a consequence of their tobacco consumption. And typically involves patients who have smoked what we would quantify as 30 pack years. Now, if you smoke a pack of cigarettes a day for 30 years, that would be considered 30 pack years. If you smoked a half a pack of cigarettes a day for 60 years, that would be 30 pack years. So the present recommendation is if you're a 30 pack year or above smoker and you're between the ages of 55 and 70, you would qualify for a low dose chest CT once a year in an effort to determine whether you might be suffering with lung cancer early on. Prior to the institution of programs like this, many patients who typically presented with lung cancer presented with more advanced disease that was not amenable to surgical intervention. If we can diagnose patients with stage one disease, the cure rate is typically as high as 90%. As you go through stage two, three, and four disease, the likelihood of achieving a cure is diminished dramatically over time. So we know from experience that if we can identify a patient early on, we're more apt to be able to treat the patient and obtain a surgical cure by identifying that patient. I mean, it was interesting that this program really kind of developed over the years when the cardiologists first started using CAT scans to identify people with coronary calcification. They do coronary calcification scoring. And as a consequence of doing those studies, they did identify lots of patients that had abnormalities on their CT scans. So that subsequently led to studies being performed in terms of what was the utility and cost effect of this, of doing these scans, you know, at predetermined timing in an effort to determine whether a patient might have an early lung cancer or not. And over time, the studies clearly indicated that, again, for this high-risk population, there's a dramatic benefit in terms of having these scans performed and being able to more effectively treat patients with lung cancer. I mean, interestingly enough, we've been doing the program here for about a year, and I think to date we've done approximately 400 scans, and we've actually diagnosed five individuals with early lung cancer who were amenable to surgery, and hopefully we'll be able to achieve a cure as a consequence of early intervention.
But because only they came in to get that screen.
Correct, correct. So, if you are, say a lifetime smoker and you're between the ages of 55 and 70, you would certainly qualify for one of these scans. And I would encourage anybody to contact their physician in order to be enrolled in the program and be evaluated.
Thanks to Dr. Gerard Matisik for contributing to the program. For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.